Welcome to CFRI Cystic Fibrosis Community Voices, a video podcast series created by and for the cystic fibrosis community.
Hello, and welcome to CFRI's CF Community Voices, coming to you from our home studio in Palo Alto, California. I'm Sue Landgraf, Executive Director of Cystic Fibrosis Research Incorporated, CFRI, and I'm very pleased to welcome our viewers and listeners. We have a very special program ahead, but before getting started, I want to thank our generous sponsors, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Chiesa USA, Gilead Sciences, Genentech, and Proteostasis Therapeutics. I also would like to note that no information presented in this podcast is intended for a patient's diagnosis or treatment. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you, and let's get started.
Hi, my name is Darcy, and I have an 11-year-old, well, almost 11-year-old daughter with cystic fibrosis, and we live in California. So I'm going to start from the beginning. She was full term and had really good Apgar, but we discovered that she had meconium ileus, which is a complete intestinal block. And so she was in the NICU for about 3 weeks. And during that time, the doctors got her cleared out, and she was also diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. And so they started her, as soon as she was able to eat, on enzymes. And that was great because she immediately started to gain weight and grow. So after 3 weeks, they sent us home, and she was doing really well. And although she had like horrible reflux, and this happened from the beginning, because she had the meconium ileus, everything was coming back up right from the get-go. And that never really stopped. So even after she was completely cleared out, she was still having really bad reflux. But she was gaining weight. The doctors didn't seem to be concerned. So we kind of just kept on going with that for a while. At some point, my husband and I got really exhausted because she wasn't sleeping well at all because of the reflux. I think the acid was pretty painful for her. So we went back into the doctors, and they prescribed a reflux medication, and that seemed to help. And she was growing like gangbusters. So if you take a look at 3 months, she was a very healthy, like nice rosy-cheeked baby, you know, really great weight gain. The doctors were really pleased, and we were really pleased. And then somewhere a little bit after 3 months, her weight just leveled off and then even started to just kind of flatline. And the doctors grew concerned. We grew concerned. You know, we started trying to get her to take formula in addition to my breast milk. We tried to I pumped my milk, and then we added formula into it and tried to boost up those calories. But she wouldn't take it, and so we tried some different creative ways of trying to get more calories into her. But it wasn't happening, and it started to become clear that it was even affecting her development. So she wasn't crawling. She wasn't able to sit up on her own. There were just some very concerning things that we saw happening or not happening with her development. So at this point, the doctor said to us that we might want to consider a G-tube. And I was still working on trying to get calories into this kid. And, you know, we were all growing more concerned. So around 9 months old, she all of a sudden grew Pseudomonas in her lungs. And the doctor was really concerned. We were really concerned. He said, we need to admit you today, and we need to treat this, and she also needs to get a G-tube. And, you know, that was a really heartbreaking moment for me. I had tried so hard to get this kid to be healthy and do everything the doctors told us to do, and it still hadn't worked. And quite honestly, I felt like a failure as a parent. I felt pretty desperate and didn't know what else to do. So we admitted her. We got the G-tube. And at that point, I wasn't even sure what to expect, you know. I was hoping that what the doctor said would be true, that it would help her. I was amazed at her recovery. So it's a laparoscopic surgery that they did on her. They went in through the belly button, and it was minimally invasive. I've heard some people call it like a belly piercing, like it's just like an extreme piercing. Of course they gave her some pain meds, but she just bounced back so fast. It was really astonishing. And immediately started to gain weight as soon as we gave her tube feeds. And it was just wonderful to see that. So we brought her home. We were giving her overnight tube feeds with a pump. And then I was breastfeeding during the day. And that was going pretty well. But she still, you know, would have bouts of throwing up. The medication we had her on didn't completely prevent her from throwing up. And then I started to see other things that I wasn't happy with. It seemed like she started to kind of ramp up with the throwing up with the formula feeds. And, you know, so we've got the picture up of when she was 9 months old. And you can see when you compare this photo with the photo a year later that, you know, her collar wasn't good when she was admitted to the hospital. But it still wasn't getting to be that kind of rosy-cheeked baby that I knew. Her hair was kind of brittle, and her skin wasn't looking as good as I thought it should be. So, and I was seeing all this throwing up, like I said. And so even though she was gaining weight, I still had some concerns. And so I talked to the nutritionist, and I talked to the doctor, and I said, is there any way that I could give her real food through the tube? And they said, oh, yeah, absolutely. And so they said, well, why don't you go look into that and let us know what you decide to do. So I started doing research online. It turns out that there are many, many, many groups on Yahoo groups, Google groups, and now, just since all this happened with us, now with the advent of social media, there's even more. There's all kinds of Facebook groups and other groups. And people all over the world have G-tubes of different ages, coming from different backgrounds, and they make their own food, and they blend it up, and they put it through the tube. So I got, you know, in touch with some of these groups, learned that there are nutritionists, clinical nutritionists that you can hire who just specialize in putting together a blenderized diet for your child. I learned about high-powered blenders and what an amazing tool they are for making blenderized food that will go through the tube. Anyway, when we really got into tube feeding with the real food was when I started to see that little girl at 3 months old come back. So if you look here now, this was a year later. She's probably about 2.5 there. You can see that the roses are back in her cheeks and her hair started to really grow, and she just caught up with her development so quickly. It was amazing. All of a sudden, she was crawling and then walking, and she almost skipped crawling. And, you know, they did some assessments on her, and they were like, wow, she's really intelligent. She's doing great. This food is really helping, and all of that stuff. It was so encouraging to see, because her development had been behind. So it really encouraged me to continue on and just continue with giving her real food. So there's two different ways that you can feed a kid through a tube. You can use a pump, or you can bolus feed, which means that you do it manually by hand. And I know lots of people who do variations of that. So I think it's not black and white. You don't have to choose one or the other. That you can do any number of things. I know some people have chosen to do overnight feeds and do some bolus feeds during the day. Some people use formula and they use real food through the tube. So I love that. I'm a creative person, and I think, you know, creative solutions are wonderful, especially when you have a challenging disease like this. So I've really become creative in figuring out how to make this work for my daughter and for our family. We started bolus feeding during the day. We kind of weaned off of the formula because we really wanted to afford her lots of opportunities to enjoy and eat food. And we were noticing that if we did the overnight tube feeds that she really had no interest. So what we would do is we would make some food that was interesting to her, finger foods, right, because she was little and fun stuff, and, you know, present her with meal that she would eat with us at the table, and then follow it up with a bolus feed. And that has worked really well for us. Some other people choose to do it other ways. Like I said, there's many different options for how you can do this. I also want to add that I think there's a lot of trial and error in this, that, you know, there have been times where we have had to, you know, adjust some of the food that we're putting in the tube, and we've realized, oh, she needs a little more nutrition, that, you know, some foods that have more iron or, you know, whatever, and we've talked this through with a nutritionist and made adjustments along the way. So, and of course, also just continuing to kind of ratchet up the calories and the healthy fats as needed. There's a funny dance that you play when you are putting real food through the tube. So there is a balance between volume and between kind of the fat content and the calories. So, of course, I mean, you can imagine if you were trying to put enough fat through a hose, it just won't go, right? So you have to find, again, I found it's a kind of a creative process, and there's some experimentation that happens of finding the right balance of what my daughter can absorb, but also what will go through the tube, and what isn't so much volume that she literally can't handle it, that it makes her throw up. One of the things that we invented in our family was to actually kind of count when you bolus feed. You don't want to go too fast because it will make the kid throw up. So we usually would count like 30 seconds to a minute between each 10 mLs of food that we would give her, so that, you know, basically kind of mimicking eating, so that we would give her enough time to let that food get into her stomach and settle before we put the next bit in. And that just seemed to work really well. And I think, again, it's kind of paying attention to the particular child and what works for them. So I was going to talk about some of the challenges of G-tube feeding. And, you know, this is just my personal experience. So I realize that there's probably a much larger list than this. But these were just some of the things that I was thinking about. So some of the challenges can be administering tube feeds at school. When Lucia was a kindergartner, we went and started the 504 plan process and then realized that they only had one nurse for the entire school district. And they could not explain to me how they were going to give her G-tube feeds. You know, she gets fed five times a day. So, you know, these are all considerations. And again, you know, we found a creative solution, you know, but these have been challenges. There can be a social stigma for some people. Lucia mostly doesn't care what other people think, and I'm so proud of her. but I know that's not always the case. And actually, it's not always the case for her, you know. The thing that really gets her mostly is when people talk like she's not there. They come up and they ask questions about the G-tube and what we're doing, how we're feeding her, and they talk to me and they say, why does she have that and what's wrong, instead of directing it to her. And so we found that a really healthy way for us to handle that is to direct the questions to Lucia. And so when people ask Lucia, then she can decide herself if she wants to answer the question or not. Sometimes I'll phrase it like, oh, Lucia, they want to know about your G-tube. Would you like to talk about that right now? And sometimes she'll decide, yeah, I'm happy and I'd like to talk about that right now. And other times she doesn't feel comfortable, and that's okay. So continuing on with challenges, some kids may not be as interested in eating when they're full, and we've gone through that. Sometimes Lucia is really interested, and sometimes she's not. Another challenge can be changing the G-tube every 3 months. Our clinic gave us the choice of having the G-tube changed there or learning how to do it ourselves. And we have felt very empowered by them to just do it ourselves at home. And that has been fantastic. You know, anytime we don't have to make another trip, we appreciate that. And I think, you know, long term, this is going to empower Lucia to do it herself. And I love that. In very rare instances, the G-tube can pop out. We only had that happen once, and it was our fault, frankly. So she was an infant, and she was hooked up to the G-tube pump, and it was the middle of the night, and the cord, the little bit that was coming from the pump down to her, got caught in the crib door, and it yanked it out of her body. It was horrible. So we had to run to the emergency room. But it's so rare. I got to tell you that it's really not a fear or a concern of mine, because since then and since we know how to handle it, it has never come out. I do want to also say that G-tubes are not a panacea. I think that there is work involved in G-tube feeds, and just like regular feeding, right? We're all trying to get more calories into our kids, and it's a challenge. And we still need to do all of our treatment plan. So the G-tube feeding is just one aspect. You know, there's exercise and following the breathing treatment regimen and all of the different medications and the things that we do to keep her healthy. So on the positive side of G-tubes, it quickly became Lucia's new normal. I know it's different for every person, and she was very little. She was 9 months old when she got it. But it quickly just became her new normal, and she just took it in stride. And because she had it in preschool, it was a really wonderful time to have that, because preschoolers are curious and they are non-judgmental. So she had all these little friends, and, you know, I would come in and give her a little tube feed, and then I would leave and go about my day. And they would come over, and they were really curious. What's going on? And I would say, well, Lucia can eat in two ways. She can eat with her mouth, or she can get a tube feed. And they would go, oh, wow. And then they'd run off and play. And I saw this as a wonderful opportunity to educate other kids and Lucia's friends about this. And so they grew up just understanding what G-tubes were and took it completely in stride. So that was a real positive for us. Some other positives: you can put all kinds of not so great tasting foods and medications through the tube. Some of the less tasty foods that we put through are things like cod liver oil, fermented cod liver oil. So great for nutrition, but doesn't taste so great. Or if you know what N-acetylcysteine is, doesn't smell so great, but you can put it through the tube. It took a lot of pressure off of Lucia to hit those calorie requirements by having the G-tube. So anytime we saw that her weight wasn't tracking where it should, you know, I would ratchet up those calories and try to get her back up there. So, you know, I'm sure that everybody tries to streamline their process and minimize work. For me, having a complete meal just ready to go, so like, you know, I have streamlined this process using, you know, like I said, blenders and crock pots and instant pots and things. I mean, you can make entire days worth of meals and instant pots. And so I really just streamlined that process. I will set things up in jars. They're pre-measured. You know, I know I'm hitting the calorie mark, and then go ahead and freeze them so that I've got days worth of food ready to go. You know, we can get through a week or two if I need to. I've done that before where I've made a couple weeks of food, frozen it, take it on vacation. So then I know that we're going to hit those calorie marks and she's going to get all the nutrition that she needs. And I don't even have to think about it while we're on vacation. So that, I think, is a real positive. I've kind of made nutrition my hobby, and I try to continue to read and research and kind of re-up my information. And so as the years have progressed, I've continued to refine what I'm putting in her tube feed to make sure that she is getting a really wide variety of foods. And I kind of will alternate between different, let's say, chia seeds and then flax seeds, right? Like, you know, so similar foods, but they have a slightly different, you know, mineral content, slightly different vitamins. And so she's getting a really wide variety of food, which I think is really important for health. I think that G-tube feeds for us have become a really powerful tool for health. So kind of like I said before, you know, it's not a perfect solution. However, it has become this powerful tool. And so whenever I've seen Lucia not gaining enough weight, when it seems like maybe she's battling an illness, I have, you know, bumped up the calories, bumped up the nutrition so that her body can adequately fight off any infection and kind of stay on track. We really try to keep her at the BMI that's recommended. It's not perfect, but we really try to strive for that. And I believe that has had a tremendous effect on her health. And so much so, I mean, she hasn't had an exacerbation that put her in the hospital since she was 9 months old. Again, there's no guarantees, but I feel like this has just been an amazing tool in our arsenal. It's not the only tool in her arsenal. Like I said, we follow the treatments. Exercise is huge for us, but I believe that this has been an important component. So Lucia is almost 11 now, and she's doing so well. And I know that this is something, you know, G-tubes are something that people are contemplating sometimes, and so I hope this information was helpful to you. I do intend to have a blog up that kind of, again, goes over our experience. I hope you can take what you like and leave the rest. And I've enjoyed being here. Thank you.